Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. We are about 6:05 here on a Thursday, which means it's time for a pick six.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the pick six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
Let's get rolling with Cliff Kingsbury on a Thursday.
Number one.
Biggest lesson for Cliff coming out of the week one loss against Tampa was what? And now, obviously, you've never learn it, apply it over the course of an entire regular season. And here we are facing the same team again going into wildcard weekend.
Doing a bunch of substituting and really slowing the game down, thinking that would help him. And I think it hurt us as a unit. You know, we play better with more rhythm and pace, and him getting on the ball and being able to have more time on the play clock to analyze and see what the defense is doing. And we really subbed a bunch. We played in some sets that were not as probably dynamic or having our best four or five skill players on the field at the same time. And I thought the coaching staff did a nice job of recognizing that and adjusting that moving forward.
It's really interesting to go back and watch week one and seeing some of the personnel groupings and some of the things they tried to do. And now hearing some of the reasoning behind it from Cliff makes a lot of sense, and also why they got away from it. One of the things that they also didn't do a good job of in week one was getting Terry McLaurin the ball. Now, that does not mean there weren't opportunities. There were certainly some shots called and some things that I think a Jaden Daniels of week four or five, even week three against Cincinnati, obviously found Terry a couple times deep there, would have made. Just week one, week two, Jaden hadn't quite figured out some of the NFL windows, some of the NFL timing, what NFL open is quite yet. But he learned tremendously fast. But what does Cliff attribute the lack of production in week one from Terry against this same Tampa team?
Yeah, I think we definitely did not have a good enough plan to get him the ball. And then Todd Bowles is a good defensive coach. So I don't, you know, having watched the game, it's hard to even watch. It's so different than what we are now. But he recognizes that's one of the best players in the league, and so he's going to do everything to take him away. And then I do a better job calling plays, and I think Jaden has evolved to a point now where when we have an opportunity to get Terry the ball, he's going to take advantage of it.
I think that's 100% correct. I think Bowles might have even had a better understanding of how good McLaurin is at that point than Quinn and Cliff was, because I think, again, Terry's ability as a contested catch player is so special that unless you just give him the opportunities, it's easy on tape to be like, he's not open. It's like, no. For him, that's open. Give him the ball. And not only might he catch it, he might catch it and break a tackle and run for an extra 20 yards. So I think that is the thing that Jaden and Cliff and everybody around the staff has learned. And in week two or week one, they did give him some deep shots, some opportunities. And again, there was some stuff that was open, but they didn't force feed it. They didn't say, hey, we're going to get him a slant, a screen, a hitch. Like, when we're going a quick game, like, let's make sure we look at Terry, because getting him involved just means other things start to happen. And Jamel Dean's a very good corner. He had a very successful day, allowed no catches to McLaurin in week one. I would imagine, because he also wasn't targeted very much. I'd imagine if you're Jamel Dean, you could play similar coverage on Sunday, and you won't have as quiet of a day. You're going to have some work to do against 17. Now, also, another way that they prevent 17 from getting involved is this defense is mega aggressive for Todd Bowles. In fact, since week 11, no team has blitzed more. Week 11, by the way, the Tampa bye week. So since Tampa did the self-scout and all the things you do want to buy and comes back in that stretch, no team has blitzed more in the NFL than the Tampa Bay Bucks. They are blitzing on 48% of pass snaps, almost one of every two. They actually blitz Jaden, one of their highest percentages of the season pre that week 11 bye at 47% in week one, something that Cliff dealt with then and we'll have to deal with now.
Yeah, I think he's great at the pressures, knowing when to dial him up and call him. It's not just third down. Like, he has a great feel for your tendencies, what you've done throughout the season, and when to bring those pressures. And so I have to be great on my sequencing and play calling, and then just give Jaden answers for those pressures. Like, we got to be able to get the ball out of our hand. We can't take those first and second down sacks. And that's the biggest deal to me, is making sure he has an outlet on every play, that they're going to be in the pressure. Hey, let's get a completion, try to make a guy miss in space, and we'll play the next play. But if you don't have answers, he'll make it a long day for you.
Sure will. Sure did in week one.
Number two.
But this isn't week one anymore. Jaden's answer in week one was simply to just run. And he did. He was pretty effective as a scrambler. But that is very different than making quick decisions and kind of getting Tampa out of some of these blitz looks, knowing that that's what they want to do. So what has been the biggest area of growth for Jaden Daniels since week one? Here's Cliff Kingsbury once again.
Everything, really. I think just understanding the system. You know, the first game, we didn't know what we were or who we were or what he was. And so even me calling plays and understanding how to put him in better situations to be successful, and all the skill guys, how do we use this guy, so we've evolved a bunch. But I think you just watch his game and the way he played that first game. I mean, the very first pass he threw for like minus 20, like a backwards pass, and he's just come a long way. So it's a lot of hard work, a lot of mental reps, and so I'm anxious to see the second time around, you know, how far we've come as an entire unit.
I'm totally right there with Cliff as an observer. Obviously, he's a participant, but it's interesting to hear him say, like, we truly did not know who we were. They have a keen sense of that now. I do think it's been a little bit squirrely as of late, as their rushing attack has not been good, but they have found ways around it, whether that's the quick passing game, whether that's the quarterback run game. That is something that they have been more comfortable putting a lot of things in Jaden's hands. And Cliff was actually asked, like, what percent of the time does Jaden make the right decision? You know, and again, that could be simply handing the ball off on an RPO, but how often does he make the right football play?
That's a great question. A high percentage, I would say. Like, he, the one thing that's shown up, I think, the last few, I would say probably the last month, when we've had to put the ball in his hands more because the run game hasn't been there. We played good teams that are good against the run, but I'd say just the negative plays, like the first, second down sacks, the sack number in general has gone up, and some of that's he's trying to take over and make the play. But I think for the most part, if you put those out, like, he's going to the right place for the ball the majority.
He definitely is. Even last week, like, the throws weren't on target to the level that we're used to with him, but he was making good decisions by and large. And I do think that when they've really preached something to him, he has shown an adaptability and dexterity to learn. And so I do wonder if we see some more throwaways, if we see some stuff this week that's a little bit different in the sack department, because that has clearly been a point of emphasis from Dan Quinn and from Cliff Kingsbury the last couple of weeks.
Number three.
Last but not least, Cliff did make the playoffs as a head coach in Arizona. This is his first trip back, though, in a long, long time. What's this opportunity mean to the Commanders offensive coordinator?
It is. It's very exciting. It's hard to get here. I think that's what these young players need to understand, is that there's a lot of veterans that have played 10, 12 years. It's like the second time they've even got in. And we got in the 1 year in Arizona, and it was not a great game, but it was a lot of work to get there. And so I think just being in the moment, understanding how fortunate we are to be in this position, and we won the last four games on the last play, and it can go like that in this league. So we got to make sure we appreciate it and take advantage of the opportunity.
The other thing about the playoffs, not just how hard it is to get back, that I don't know that unless you're in it every day, you really appreciate and understand. And I say this as someone who's on a beat, not on a team, right? I was in the locker room every day for the better part of 5 years covering a team, and I only covered one playoff season in 2015. And the thing is, but I did cover, like, from the studio side of it in Dallas. I covered a couple of playoff teams, but Every playoff team I've ever covered, especially in the NFL, is how quickly it ends. And it's something that we're not really thinking about right now. And hopefully we're not thinking about it for a couple of weeks. Who knows? Maybe we'll know when it ends, because they go on a run and they're in the Super Bowl. And it's like, oh, we got one more. But when you think that you can win, which all these guys do, and then suddenly it's over. And the next day is locker cleanout. The just suddenness of that is something that is hard to describe. And I just think you remember the, you know, experiencing that as a reporter in 2015, going from, hey, they're going to beat Green Bay. I like the way this matchup is shaping up for Washington, and thinking about what the next game would be and all that, to, wait, what? We have to be in Ashburn at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and a bunch of dudes are going to be putting all their stuff in trash bags? The hell? So I think that would be, if I'm you know, a Bobby Wagner, if I'm a Dan Quinn, if I'm getting up in front of the team this week at all, I'd be like, not only should you appreciate this moment because of how hard it is to get here, and you can talk, you know, have guys that have been those 10-year players talk about how this might even be their first playoff game. But a guy like Bobby, who's both won and lost, can talk about how abrupt the ending is if you lose and how terrible that feeling is. And that's something you just don't want on Sunday. Joe Witt's had that feeling. He's also had lots of playoff winning in his career as an assistant coach. This will be his first game as a defensive coordinator. You'll hear from Joe next on the back half of our Pick 6 on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And we're in the midst of our Pick 6 at 6, where you get the biggest storylines, the most important sound bites of the day, which on a Thursday come from the Commanders coordinators. And it's time to pick things up with number 4 and Joe Witt Jr. I heard from Cliff Kingsbury off the top of the hour. If you missed it, rewind or check the podcast, both available in the Odyssey app.
Number 4.
Let's get started with Joe Witt Jr. and same place we started with Cliff. How have things changed for your defense since week 1 until now? There's personnel changes, there's schematic changes, whole lot of change since week 1 for Joe Witt's side.
Well, if you look at the first 3 games, all right, we were, what, 31st in pass defense? All right, we finished 3rd, okay? We were probably 31st in percentage. We finished 3rd. Third down, you know, we've been up and down. Right before this last game, we were teetering in the top 10. We were horrible then, you know. So, you know, the defense has really trended in the right direction, you know. So the points have been down. So the defense is just different.
He doesn't want to give a lot of detail. And he probably also doesn't want to, like, say bad things about some of the guys that were playing. But, you could say it's different. So what's the defense at least doing well at this point of the season?
Well, the times that we've gone out there, so, like, we dropped the punt in the last game. We went out there and held them to a field goal. You know, the whole, you know, the way we played in the red zone this last game. The sudden change, situational football, we're playing much better, okay? The thing that we have to do is get the ball. You know, we have to do that. You know, that's what – and I know everybody wants to talk about the run game, but if we can get the ball and get some of those turnovers, that controls a lot of the game as well. But the way we run and hit and the violence and the connection that we play with, really pleased with that.
So much better than week 1, where they were still having all kinds of issues. And, oh, my God, it's a bunch. Let's all run into each other and not cover anybody. No, they're not doing that stuff anymore. It's much better. They've got better communicators out there. And obviously, as we'll talk about in just a second, they could have a much, much better one this weekend with Marshawn Lattimore making his return to the lineup. But the passing game is just part of what you have to deal with when it comes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Number 5.
The running game, not only is Bucky Irving a 1,000-yard rusher, again, more on him in a moment, but this has been the best rushing season of Baker Mayfield's career. He's actually the 7th leading rusher amongst quarterbacks in the NFL on scrambles this season. What's that all about, Joe Witt?
I think he is just doing a good job of making people miss. I mean, he's been hard to tackle in the pocket across every team that goes in there. So you have to hit him as if you're going to hit a running back. If you go in there like you're going to hit a quarterback, normal quarterbacks, you're going to probably come off. So
simple as that. Like, you can't give that dude space. He's slippery. And the thing is about him, he's slippery not only in space, he's slippery in the pocket as well, which is why he's hard to sack. And they really struggle with that in week 1. Now, of course, the most dangerous running threat is Bucky Irving, the rookie running back who went over 1,000 yards for Tampa this season. What's the key to stopping him?
Well, the key is to handling the screen game, because that's how they like to use him a lot. And then in the run game, you know, making sure that we take care of the C-gap in the run game.
So the C-gap is more outside, and there are plays, like he had an 18-yarder against the Chargers, where it's a trap. So on trap, you basically let one of the defensive tackles come up the field, and then you have, or actually I think I guess technically it was a wham, because it was a tight end who did this, not an offensive lineman, but you then have a tight end, or if it's wham, a trap, it's an offensive lineman, come in and smash that guy in the face, and you trap him. It's like, ha-ha, you think you won, but you didn't. We just pushed you a different direction. And then typically that creates an inside crease that a running back can go off of. Well, against LA, Derwin James sees that coming, and he attacks where the play is going to go, and Bucky Irving sees that and is like, well, we have the edge sealed too, and he gets outside, and he's gone for 18 yards. So you have to be really, really disciplined. Play your gap. Make sure that the cutbacks, the backside C gap on some of these outside stretch plays are covered. So Bucky Irving is... like, he's not Saquon Barkley, but is a Saquon-style runner. He's not a good, dirty runner where he's going to pick up 5-6 yards, much like Rico Dowdle did last week for Dallas. He's just going to plow it up in there and get what's blocked and maybe fall forward 2 extra yards. He is a boom or bust, big-time hitter. And you have to be scared of that if you're Joe Witt, not to mention the screen game, like you mentioned. The screen game for Tampa has been the best in the NFL all year, something that Joe Witt is well aware of.
Well, they have a really good offensive line that gets out right now. You know, so when they get out, they get their bigs on people's littles, and they create voids for people to go. They have a number of different type of screens. You know, you have the play-action screen, the slip screen, the cross screen, you know, all those to the backs, and then you have the ones that the tunnel screen, tear screen from the outside. So they have just a variety of different screens and different ways of getting to it, and then they get in and they go with it. And so
they get in, they go, and they seem to go a long, long way. Again, Mayfield, the leading passer in the NFL on passes behind the line of scrimmage, and the structure of this screen game is one of the reasons why Liam Cohen is going to be a hot topic or a hot commodity on the head coach market, likely as things heat up after the Bucs ultimately lose, which we hope happens on Sunday.
Number 6.
All due respect. Speaking of respect, I don't know if Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore respect each other. I do know that they have had some wars over the years. And Marshawn Lattimore has won a lot of those wars. Lattimore has held Evans catchless in 5 of their 13 career matchups. And they actually did play earlier this year when Lattimore was in New Orleans and healthy. And it was the first time in Lattimore's career against Evans that he didn't actually wind up shadowing him basically the entire game. It's the first time that he hasn't covered him on, I believe it's over 50% of snaps in their 13 career matchups. Evans has been below all of his career averages in the games against Lattimore. And I think a huge reason why is Lattimore is a big, strong dude who has tremendous play strength. And so where Evans can bully a lot of corners in the NFL, Lattimore is just not one of those guys. So knowing that, knowing the history, knowing what he's got out there in Marshawn Lattimore, assuming that he plays, how do you handle the matchup between those two if you're the guy coaching Lattimore, Joe Witt Jr.?
Well, we're just focused about winning the game. You know, hopefully Marshawn will be available. And once we get that word, you know, we'll handle that from that standpoint. But there's nothing wrong with having two competitive players go out there and compete against each other. And both guys, you know, they do it the right way for the most part. So if they get lined up across from each other, they'll go at it, and which they should.
They sure will. The question is, what does go at it mean? And he talks about, oh, they do the right things for the most part. The not most part parts have often been against each other, but it's a playoff game. And I think the one thing that if it starts to get chippy, if I'm Dan Quinn, I pull Lattimore aside and I go, hey, man, you're amazing. I love how much you fight. But I need you to make sure that if anything goes down, you don't get ejected. Just don't get thrown out of this game. Be physical, be chippy. If he punches you, we'll deal with it with the refs. The refs, do not get thrown out of this game. He is too important to this team. But Evans is super important to what they do for Tampa. Jalen McMillan has really come on, but without Chris Godwin, that passing game takes a huge hit, and they take a huge hit in the red zone and on third down without Evans. That is really where he shines these days. It's not down in, down out, like the peak of Mike Evans' career. But in those biggest of moments, they find ways to get him where they want. And it's going to be on Lattimore, Witt, and the Commanders to make sure that that doesn't happen at the success that happened in the first game where Tampa was like 85% or something ridiculous on third downs. That's Witt. That's Cliff. You got it. You got all you need on a Thursday. That's what we do for you, pick six style, Wednesdays and Thursdays here on the Hoffman Show. Friday's pick six. We'll pick the six players outside of the quarterbacks that we think are most important to the game. So tune in for that tomorrow. Also tomorrow, Trevor Sikkema, a Pro Football Focus, joins us at 4:30. And Anthony, who do we got? We have someone at 5 tomorrow. Who am I forgetting about at 5 o'clock tomorrow?
I know tomorrow, 4:30, we have somebody. We have Trevor Sikkema.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Oh, tomorrow.
Or as 5 one of the times I sent you for the guests that were...
Yeah.
We're going to have someone good at 5 o'clock tomorrow. I just don't know if it's someone local that is great that we definitely are going to have, or whether it's someone who's national who's great that we're not sure we're going to have yet. So tune in tomorrow at 5 o'clock to find out. Coming up next, Anthony, what are we doing next?
College football.
We do have college football tonight. We'll take a look at the playoff preview tonight, and then real things to close the show coming up here on the Team 980.